meaning depending on the surrounding context. And same way, lasering something has, lasering a wall has a different meaning depending on what the context is, and it's sort of up to an interpreter to look at that whole scene.
Okay, well, that makes sense then, because the stone could just be a stone, or it could actually be a command, like go here or something.
There was one example I was thinking of was an idea of a stylus that's kind of a virtual pen, and then you have, basically you want to be able to draw on a piece of paper with a stylus, and you know, you have projected drawing. And so one way of doing that is that the paper knows about the stylus, and the stylus knows about the pen, and they're kind of looking for it, like they're near each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were thinking that a more decoupled way of arranging for that is the stylus emits ink, which is kind of this virtual object at its depth, and then the paper is something that knows, like, oh, if there's ink near me, I'll, like, turn that to a mark.
Mm.
And so that means, like, instead of, you could have a stylus, but you could have all these other kind of instruments which emit ink and don't know anything about paper and all these other things which receive ink. They're kind of communicating through this ink abstraction.
And the ink is eventually going to be like bytes on a processor somewhere, right?
Yeah. But
is it worth thinking about that now? Because that's something that confuses me, because it feels like they need to be in some format that all the other things that have ink can know about, right?
Well, I think the confusing thing is ink. Ink is located at a particular point in space.
Mm-hmm.
So is it a virtual object which appears there, or is it kind of part of the field?
Yeah.
Like, especially if you want to think about ink kind of diffusing through space. So, like...
Oh boy, that was somebody's tire.
Yeah. Oh, is that Josh's tire?
That's Josh's tire.
It's okay.
So diffusing through space, like air from a tire.
Like air from a tire.
That was apropos.
Or yeah, like all the Star Logo kind of stuff of like diffusing scents and multiple scents. And so you can imagine that physical space has a kind of field associated with it, where you can store data at different points in physical space, which is not, it's not physically there, but the physical object can sense that. And then that allows things to communicate kind of the same way that physical objects actually communicate, this kind of decoupled way. But you now have a state which is not in an object, a state which is in the field, or something like that.
But I think there you could also have something that represented the ink field. So like, say you were making this thing and you decided you needed that abstraction, like maybe a common pattern when you need that abstraction is you bring out an object that said this is going to represent the ink field, and then you can always refer to it.
Or like, how do you examine the ink field? This is another thing to think about.
It's the ink that's being emitted.
In
the process. Yeah, so say you wanted the pen, but you also wanted the spray painter,
right,
which would
yeah.
do a different pattern of ink and a different color or something. And you wanted to be able to hold the spray painter and move the paper or, you know, do various interactions with those. And you needed to keep track of, like, what is the current field of ink, right? You know, maybe some 3D sort of point cloudy kind of thing or something like that.
And I mean, I guess like we were saying, one thing you could do is just have the table hold the field, and then you have, like, you're working on the table, and the table's kind of taken care of, remembering where that field is, but that field, I don't know.
No, I like Toby's.
So what I'm saying is that you need, at some point, you need to write the rule about how the ink works. You need to write the rule that says, oh, it's a 3D volume, there's a value at every point or something, so it's a function of 3D space to how much ink or to a color or something like that. You have to define it, or you have to say, oh, and also, like, at every time step it spreads like such and such. And then, so you need to write that somewhere. And then your stylus and your spray painter will send messages to the ink field, and your paper will listen for events from the ink field or something like that. But the ink field still needs to be defined somewhere. So I'm saying, well, maybe what you do is you have an object that defines it, with, like an index card or a notebook, where you write, this is how ink works. And then your things make reference to that object.
Yeah.
And this would...
That makes sense.
Yeah, to the ink field. And this would be a programming pattern that people would use when they need it.
I see. I guess kind of the same way as the alternate reality kit, that you have your reality and then you have to define, like, the law of gravity and, like, the kind of the laws of nature that hold in that in that reality. And so ink and the diffusion of ink is kind of a law of nature in whatever kind of area or zone that you want to be doing the ink, which could be the entire room.
Right.
Or
so it's a law, but it also has state, which is different than the wind rules or the law of gravity rule. So it's like, where does that state live? And I'm saying, well, maybe it should live on the place where you
near the rules,
it.
Yeah.
Are we going to do a one-to-one such that I will physically be using ink at the same time that I'm also virtually drawing ink, such that I can see it in a digital component, and also, in other words, I'm going to have a piece of paper and I'm going to draw with ink, but is that also going to be mimicked somewhere?
I think the example is trying to get at, like, if you had a completely, if the ink were virtual, enabling you to, like, draw with, like, rainbow color, like, ink that you
understood.
Know, changes color or something.
Understood, but this is, like, asking a question past that.
Okay.
Are we going to have, do we want to have both, such that if I use ink, that it's also can be represented virtually?
And that's, like, a really, that's a cool idea. Like, I like the idea of being able to do it purely virtually, but also if I can actually get out of some paper and write, and then have it, like, everything captured.
Yeah.
You know, like, that would be,
we'll be able to make marks on paper and then have those be recognized and used. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't like an essential component of the system. It's just a thought experiment to get at this field idea.
But you can imagine in a hybrid, it's like I draw with my real ink and then like other stuff is like growing out of it as well. It's like, you know, make it
right,
like,
there are lots of things you can do.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like all of the anti-object stuff, all of the scent diffusion and Pac-Man, you know, Pac-Man ghosts find their way to Pac-Man and all that stuff. Would be all that kind of touches on this question of how do you represent the field. So
I'm sort of reverse engineering where this whole question is coming from, but you're saying we might want these artificial fields, say pervading space, like this ink field or something like that. But you're saying we should still have a physical object that kind of represents that field. Is that a part of what you're saying?
That allows you to inspect that
refer
field
to the field.
Refer to the field.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that all the state in the system is physically located. So I'm hesitant to give that up just because field seems, you know.
So one sort of metaphor you could use would be, say, like something like a barometer. You know, like we have this field pervading space, which is barometric pressure, and you could sort of it's definitely like a it's kind of a cognitive slur, but you can sort of imagine like a barometer is the representation of that invisible field.
Right.
So we could have
we could have
ink barometers where it could be like a little device.
Yeah.
And you could even do the AR thing of hold up an iPad as a portal and kind of see.
Yeah, or like a window.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a really good point.
Yeah. Any surface, but it was supposed to work and kind of like move through the space and kind of like see the field. It's like you can't see with your naked eyes. You just have to like Get out your Ghostbuster.
Turning on your fog machine and then we can see. Turn on your fog machine and see all the lasers in the room.
Yeah. I think that the question though is like conceptually, where is that data stored? Is it actually data? How is that represented? How do things sense the field? Like how objects, you know, kind of query that.
But where it's actually stored is not, to me that doesn't seem like any more troublesome than any other question. It's like, there's data, there's like a virtual thing. If this bug is active and blessed, then there's some bytes and something weird somewhere, I don't really care where, they animated just like bytes that encode the field or somewhere on your computer, but it's like whatever.
I meant conceptually.
Yeah.
Like, where in your mind is that state associated with?
It's like in space.
So
it's like the best way.
Toby's saying it's attached to the notebook where you have to find the rules.
But why would the field that's like all, that's like literally the field that I'm breathing in?
Just so you like have a place that you can look at it, I think, right?
Yeah.
So you can maybe swap it out for a different one. You could swap it out for a different one. You're like, actually, I want the field to work like this. Let's put this in the closet.
Or you could like put in different like filters on top of it or something like that.
I'm not sure what the question is.
So, so it's sort of like, where does it live? Like, where does the data that defines this field and its identity live?
That data.
But
the way that I recognize it is, I go back to that board over there where Brett has talked about, you can actually see how everything's working. And it's, what if I were to swap out that card? I actually want that pin over there now to be only green, not blue. And he would swap the control panel card over in that location.
But the rules that define the behavior of this virtual behavior of this mug are also going to be some card somewhere, not on the object.
I was saying they would be on the object.
So there'd be like a
there would be state on the mug. So, like, the state of, like, who does that belong to, right? The mug knows, like, that it's Haim's mug or Glenn's mug or something, just for example. And that state lives on the mug, and you can bring it wherever you want. And if you inspect it, you can inspect that state.
Okay.
Or it could be, like, always projecting, like, the name of the person on it.
So why is there a field? Why is the air any different? Why is it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe you should say, like, inspect the air, like, what are the things that are on it, and then fields would be things that are on there.
That's my mind's eye.
I feel like the sort of spatialization of a field should be exactly where the field actually is. So, in other words, if we have pieces of paper with ink on them, it shouldn't be that there's a little box there that's where the ink lives. It's that the ink should be thought of as living wherever it actually spatially is. But then, of course, there's something a little bit unsettling about that, because then it's like what is our ink, or what is our way of connecting with this field? And in my mind, that's where this idea of a detector or a sort of a barometer act becomes valuable, because it matches our experience in the real world. You know, we have an electric field pervading space. If we want to interact with if we want to investigate the electric field, we get out an electric field detector.
Right.
It's really beautiful to just visualize things like that. Sort of in our mind, do the thought of experiment, visualize the electric field, the gravitational field, by holding up a piece of, like, a match, a piece of cardboard, and then you can move it around and, like, slice it and see if it's seen.
That's what the iron filings do for magnetic fields.
Yeah.
There is a missing ingredient here, which is that this is read access. This is kind of like, how do we sense or read the presence of this field? There's a separate question, which is how do we define the behavior of this field? But in my mind, we can sort of use the same pattern we've been discussing already, where within the bounds of a certain environment, we know there's going to have to be some kind of disconnection in which, you know, if we want our ghost stones to move around a certain way, we expect that we'll put down cards in a certain environment which describe how the ghost stones should move. So I feel like this could fit the same pattern. And there is a disconnection there. There is a... The behavior is not located, the definition of the behavior is not located in the same place as the object itself, but I sort of feel like we've already gotten a sense that that's something that we might want to have.
Mm-hmm. But that the state of the objects are on the objects.
Yeah, it lives. Yeah, if you have a field pervading space, then the state of that pervades space.
Mm-hmm. And so you'd inspect the air.
I mean, the nice thing about thinking about physical objects is just that they are contained, and like anything I want to know about this cup is contained within the cup.
I like that.
And with a field, you can't really do that. And so, I like the idea of having a representation of the field that is all that's here. Like. I've captured it in my hand.
So what do you imagine, what kinds of things would you want to do with that contained representation?
Edit it by hand, draw pictures on it, throw it out, put a new one in.
Well, I guess, like, how would you want to add ink, I guess? Like, how would you program the behavior of, I want to add to this virtual field, this question I have? I don't know if this is your question. But
I feel like most ways that you'd actually want to interact with or engage with the field itself, you want to do in its actual spatial environment. So what you have here is like a, like, I mean, I can see lots of reasons why you'd want to have a sort of pointer in some sense to the fields. You'd want to have a card that says the electric field on it, because then, you know, if you're building some kind of if you're building some equation that's going to do some computations with these fields, you have a little card to refer to and put down and things like that. But it still feels like that is a more pointer than most things we're talking about. I still feel like it's a symbolic representation of the field rather than the field itself.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what you're talking about.
So would the field be essentially an object which is a volume which fills the entire room?
Yeah, if that's, I guess this is what I'm speculatively proposing, is that its spatial extent would be the spatial extent that actually makes sense.
So anytime I point at the cup, it says, like, do you mean the cup or the electric field or the gravitational field? Or
I guess that's
the
a
field?
That's a,
well, maybe
that's a UI.
Maybe what you would do is you would use these stand-ins in the same way that, like, if you remember on Paula's thing, there were tokens that stood for the, like, the cats were the Lego pieces, but then there are also, like, little stickers or tokens that, like, also meant cat.
Yeah.
And so you could, if you wanted to just tell the system, hey, I want to know about cats, you could either point at the thing or you could point at the token, and the token would know, oh, that means cats. So you could have, in the same way that Josh is saying, you could have a token that represents each field. So say there were, you know, three fields you cared about, then you could have tokens that represented them. And so then if you wanted to say, if you wanted to program the spray paint can, you need to say, okay, when I press the button, then, you know, add red ink to the ink field. Oh, the ink field. That, you know, you can point at the ink field, and you'd still have something you can point at.
Yeah.
But it would, the thing itself would be located in space in the way that is satisfying to, like, where we think it exists in space.
I think you want both, right? Like, it seems like it is useful, like, the binder, you know, where you can kind of flip through, like, here's all the layers in space, you kind of see, like, all the different things in there. But it's also out here. It's in both.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the idea of, like, a model or a wonder is, like, intrinsic to this. Like, you're gonna, it's going to be inescapable. You're not always going to look for the actual.
Yeah.
And so if I feel like if the question is, what is the canonical owner of the state, it shouldn't be the token.
Right. The token's just a reference to the object.
It's an E with a vector symbol over it.
Yeah.
The object of Paula's situation being the cat.
Yeah.
Because there is still a physical representation.
Here I was thinking like the ink field or something
like
that.
There's got to be the override. I mean, that's why the system works. It's like the known that it's what we know,
yeah.
Right? And then if we want to augment that or change that with our system, we can. The tokens will have to
Which I think would be useful in other contexts too. So like in the PCR machine, it may be inconvenient to point at a component that's like embedded in the box or whatever. but you still want to be able to refer to it. So you make a token, which is like an alias or something, and then you have that. And then anytime you want to refer to that thing, you no longer have to point at. You can point at the token, and that's the same thing as referring to the thing.
I could also imagine you point at the PCR machine, and it prints out blueprints or like an outline view or some sort of like thing that's kind of more schematic or more of a list, and then each you would point at that line in the outline view. Or
and those
that part of the
those
schematic.
Things in the schematic are these aliases for the actual object.
Yeah, they become the tokens, which is kind of nice, and it's an in-world UI.
Like especially if you have like a box and you have a bunch of stuff inside the box, then you should be able to like just print out a list of the contents of the box or have a projected version of that and be able to point to things inside the box.
That becomes a magic trick. It's in the box, and only you, the owner of the pointer, know.
Computer has to know somehow.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, with ARFIDs, maybe not.
Something that makes me nervous about fields is like the reason why certain places in some offices Wi-Fi doesn't work. Right? It's Wi-Fi doesn't work in like some random place, and you're like, whoa, like, where does it work and where does it not work? Like, like that kind of uninspectability. I don't think that's necessarily an inherent problem.
But imagine if you could, like, on demand, just bring a map. And have CD map. It's like, oh, it's blocked by this wall. I get it.
Right. I guess as long as there's like inspectability built in from the beginning, which is not a priority of Wi-Fi somehow.
Yeah. Well, with Wi-Fi, you don't actually know because you don't have a sensor everywhere. But our fields are virtual.
So we could have the entirety of them.
Yeah, so you could have a map which is always up to date, always complete, and you could actually change it.
That's good to bring up, Glenn, because it's very true. It's very frustrating with...
I mean, I don't know if we should be comparing to that analogy, but that is a field that is frustrating often. I've been thinking about that for years.
Well, it's GPS and cellular data. It's all the same, I mean, same problems.
It will, like, have to, like, you know, actually turn it into a field in this system, so you could, like, it, like, projects on the floor, like, the Wi-Fi coverage. But it's like, it's unknown. It's like the fog of war and an RTS game, and it has to walk around with their laptop and like carve out the space and like the heat map sort of like built in. And then we can have like a map with the Wi-Fi coverage.
Yeah. We have the robot do it. And the robot roll around the map.
Yeah, because it is dynamic.
Maybe all of our imps have a Wi-Fi map around them too. It might be useful because you can actually get your location within like 20 feet by just seeing what the signal strength from all the different Wi-Fi access points are.
I don't want to ground it to the concession too strongly in just the Wi-Fi. That's just something that came up. Like,
they'd also have a barometer. Check out the pressure.
Seems like it's the same about visibility. Just that sort of, like, you're used to being frustrated by having to deal with things that you can't see.
Yes.
Or I'm speaking for you, but yeah. But and I feel like that is actually putting that, it seems to me that there is a similar concern that what we, at least in this discussion, what we have to some extent converged to is a sense of, oh, like, we can have these invisible fields pervading space, and okay, they'll only be like one inspection away, but we're sort of feel like, well, maybe that is something that we want. But I can imagine people using that as a, I can imagine people abusing that. I can imagine people using that as like a hole that they can operate in a more conventional, non-physical way, and sort of use that to do non-physical, non-visual computational work and hold state.
So another application, I guess, and it, besides the ink, is the, we were just talking about this yesterday, the federated wiki thing of, you have a federated wiki is a reference that we use. If you have a piece of paper which has data on it and another piece of paper which wants to visualize any data that's nearby, so you take the papers and put them together, and then you have a chart that has the data that's on this. And one way of thinking about that is, like, this guy, like, is just kind of querying, are there objects around me that have a data property or something like that, and then binds to that. Another way of thinking about it, like, is something with data is always kind of like exuding data into the field.
Yeah.
And then this one kind of smells it, and if it smells data, then it plots it. And I'm not really sure which is the best way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I remember when I was talking with Paula and Nagel about simulation, I think Nagel hit on this really good point, which was, if there's just like one or two objects, it sort of doesn't matter how
like, it's equivalent whether this one is pushing or this one is pulling or something. But once you have, like, dynamic rules, like, when there are five or more hyenas in an area and, like, one antelope or something, then they all attack or something like that. That seems like the place where it's more interesting, where it actually really does start to matter how you can make those kinds of rules. So I can imagine, like, lots of objects listening to that thing. That might be another way of figuring out how those fields could work. If there's, like, a field idea of exuding or pulling or something. Or, like, lots of objects listening to lots of other objects. You know, it's very abstract, I think.
My experience with simulation stuff, it's like hard, like the push versus pull, and our representation, it's like not gonna, it's, I don't, it's like you want to be flexible for whoever's gonna end up doing like actual something. You don't want to like say that it has to be done differently, like it's probably gonna change depending on the application. Because the kind of thing's gonna be hard to get it, it'd be hard to sort of figure out the right canonical answer without actually.
Right. This is like the idea of loose coupling, I think we're getting at, right?
And I think the tool for Inflow is saying, like, this guy says, do I see anyone around me that has data and then pulls from that, versus this one's just kind of exuding a scent of data and this one smells it, of course, want to, like, sight and smell, basically, which are have two different ways of understanding the world around you, and maybe we should support both of them.
Mm.
And you can, like, a query basically is, like, looking, trying to see something, then you can also have scent-like things which just kind of travel through the field, through the intervening space. But the goal ultimately is to have objects which have useful emergent behavior when they're spatially near each other, and to be able to couple things in interesting ways just kind of by putting them in the same physical space. And the sight and smell seem like kind of complementary ways of achieving that coupling.
For some reason, when you said that, this is probably the stupidest way of thinking about it. But I imagine, like, all of the things on this table have, like, just kind of, like, frowny faces on them. But then as you put more and more together, they start, like, their smile starts, like, getting, I don't know, maybe they all want to be together or something. But...
After lunch, they all want to be together.
Sociable objects. Please.
It just has like a smile on its face, like a really big smile as you throw it in the garbage, because that's what it wants to be.
You would throw it in like sound effects.
Whee! Yeah, I think the field idea is interesting for that. Like, they could also be pushing and pulling on those fields, right? Like you talked about, sight and smell. I wonder about like the Serengeti thing. Like, if we wanted to add behavior, like the lion when the lion is on top of this elephant or something, or rules like that. I mean, like, any arbitrary rule about the physical location of various things, or classes of things, even. Like, if prey animals are together, then they're more safe from predators or something. Those kinds of things. I'm trying to ground it in one of the specific examples.
Well, it seems like the site's kind of, like, query style leads to more direct rules, where you could say, like, when this condition is like kind of set up a very specific condition that you want to react to, whereas it seems like the looser kind of coupling possibly through the field can lead to kind of more more emergent types of situations, that there's no specific rule that makes this useful thing happen, but I figured out that, you know, just because these things have their individual behaviors, when you put them together, then it does this useful thing. That's kind of something I'm really interested in, is having, because that's how you do, I mean, that's what mechanical engineering is, or electrical engineering, it's like sticking physical things together in such a way that you kind of get this emergent behavior from how its physical properties interact. instead of having to like explicitly code up rules for how it pushes on everything else. So I'm kind of interested in that.
That intense for fields, I think, brings up a new set of challenges, because I'm imagining that these fields could just become, I'm imagining a dystopic future where these fields are just like the future version of APIs or data formats or something like that, where, you know, Glenn wants to tap a video coaster and have it come up on the screen. So he says, oh, when I tap on this, it sends out like a video into the video field. But then somebody somewhere else creates something that is going to receive video, but uses a different like video field because they don't realize that they exist. They each one doesn't realize that the other exists. And then when you put them together, nothing happens because they're talking over different layers of the world. So if we want something that's really flexible and adjustable, it's sort of, it seems to speak to a different concept of field than I'm used to, because I'm used to the sort of very strictly defined fields, like an ink field, like we would write down exactly what ink is and how it behaves. And this has to be a more, a less structured concept of field, where when you send out video or listen for video, it can be all sorts of different things, and there's layers of reinterpretation and translation somehow in the field.
Yeah, you're talking about interpreters being like maybe physical objects or something, right, that represent some process happening on data coming into it. So I could put like the notebook, like the interpreter in front of my video coasters or something that lets it translate from video coaster thing to
an adapter. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
But will we not have,
I think, the
course
adapter is the best thing.
Yeah.
That's one approach, is to at the outset try to have the forethought to think about like, oh, here's examples of different kinds of data that we will want to spread. Let's like have well defined things for each. But my concern is just that the thing about standards is that they tend to proliferate, and there's always mismatches, and you want to be flexible. You want to be able to extend and do new things, but maybe it doesn't exactly fit some old standard, so you maybe want to change the standard, but then other things already use the standard are going to break. And I guess I feel like one set of approaches is to try to be thoughtful and define things in advance. Another approach is to try to just have it be an inherently very flexible medium where there's a lot of sort of, you try to put some intelligence in the reinterpretation layer.
Just think back to the original diagram that you read here at the offsite, and like this one of the iterative series of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And like what part of it, this conversation is a lot about like anticipating like what's going to be and trying to like design the time for it. And it's, I feel like it's like you can see far, but like so far, you know, that's so, like at some point you're sort of building up, you know, sort of build a platform and you take a flag on the ground, build the specifications, and you find out what works and doesn't work, and you try to like, yeah, that's what that iterate part of this conversation is like really exciting, because there's also this that we're not going to know until we really get into it how to actually build applications with it.
And a lot of this is responding to the platform that we built last year.
Yeah, totally.
And the applications that are built in that, limitations of that.
Right.
So it's not like we're totally in the dark.
No, I'm not saying we're totally in the dark. I'm just saying we can only see, like, it's kind of like we have forethought now from using that. Part of what I'm hearing is like, we want to figure out like the protocol for like doing everything. It's like, well, yeah, maybe that would be great, perfect, but it doesn't. It can be like, it's gonna suck in its own special way. It's gonna do these in other ways. By trying it out, we're gonna learn like what, you know, what the protocol should be, the standard to the pushing and pulling.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a really good reminder, I think, for me to hear. Just because it's easy for me to get lost in like trying to go for some perfect anticipation of everything, and that's not what we're trying to do.
That's why I was trying to think of, okay, well, we know what gravity does. Is there a way that we have a couple of knowns to build on to start? Maybe that's just the producer of me saying, hey, let's come up with a couple of knowns that we'll build on top of.
Just the
a couple of knowns. You know, we actually define a couple of properties. Like, we define a few parameters within the space, and then we can go from there.
That's partly why I want this time Tuesday lunch to be like a place where we start like work. I feel like this was actually really good because I feel like we're coming to more of like, we sort of understand where everyone else is now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And like some parameters of the space, like we have this idea of virtualization, about ink fields, we have this like example of writing virtual ink, which I think is good. We're gonna come up with more at the MemX Jam after
this. Yeah,
just
because we're serving like,
yeah. It's pretty good.
So normally as a student, you know, I guess one thing that I have is, like, people get to understand through all our iterative process,
for me, it's something we'll build by the end of the year and use for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's really nice to have that break. Even for that old business. Yeah. It's about 16. I think it is challenging, but getting, yes, it's hard.
And be useful beyond just this group. So not necessarily like shipping it, but bringing in students or bringing in collaborators and having them build things. Maybe even having the people down south or some university or somewhere set up a parallel system and also kind of work with the same abstraction. So it has to be good enough for that.
By like one group or something.
A group we're tied closely to.
Yeah. And one thing that we were thinking about with regards to compatibility is that we would, I think we want another implementation by someone somewhere else, and then to be able to take objects that were made here and move that into their implementation. And have
so you're really
work.
Distributed object. Like, I could take my magic mug that has my name on it. I want to take it to LA. It'll say, this is Prime's mug, but Toby just drank from it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
To a certain, and so, like,
yeah.
One way we're thinking about it is like Unix. Like, there's a kind of a standard directory structure in Unix, and then you can have different implementations of Unix, but they all know where devnull is and what devnull is. And they all know, like, they know what a file is and what a file system is and where certain things they care about are in the file system, and so that acts as a kind of common ground between different implementations and different processes. And so, we might have our implementation of laser tracking, and they might have their own completely different implementation of laser tracking, but if they have the same kind of name or protocol, then this mug which responds to lasers, I can bring it down there and it can respond to lasers in a way that makes sense for that context. So that may or may not happen, but it's kind of a goal to at least have, to at this stage, to at least be thinking about how that kind of standardization could be achieved, even if we don't achieve it. I think this is kind of the time to be thinking. I think this is kind of the time to let our thoughts go further than what we actually will build, because we don't know what we're going to find by thinking kind of out on the edges.
Okay, so at some point, there's kind of like an expanding design ideation moment we're in right now. But there will come a time when it's like, what's actually going to get through right now? Collapse is the wrong, is a bad word for that, but it's like conversion.
Maybe even compromise.
Compromise.
It's like, we thought of all these neat ideas, but like, we didn't really figure these out, and these things coalesce, and this doesn't seem necessary, and so we're just going to build this stuff. And kind of keep the other stuff in our notebook for a few years, when we do the design again.
Why do you want the objects that are work here to work in a different place? I know that's a very naive sounding question, but like, what is like the maybe design goal around that? Maybe that's too wonky a term, but
Is it to simulate, like, what would it be like to...
It's part of the, any piece of... Any pair of scissors can cut any paper.
Okay.
That thing. Whereas the object in Sketch is not an object in Photoshop. That thing. The beautiful thing about the physical world is that it's not a silo. It can bring things from one to another. And so if I can drink out of this mug here and down south, I should be able to do a bit more magical things with the mug here and down south. Assuming I go into an environment down south which provides enough capabilities, provides the capabilities that this mug needs. Mm-hmm. So if there are no cameras down there, then of course it's not going to let us do cameras. Or if there's no processing power down there, like the processing power to do its thing. So if you go into an environment that doesn't have the capabilities, then you should really say, like, I need a camera and so much processing power and
if they're available, it will.
And yeah, it'll come to life. I think that's why they're not called the room, because I don't want it to be about, like, here's this magic room. More of, like, here's magic stuff.
Reality kit.
Were you thinking at all about the, like, Apple library naming pattern? Or were you just going for the reality kit? Okay. Well, there seems to be, like, a double meaning in that there's also, like, Apple puts out
research.
WebKit and HealthKit and all these different, like, little, like, toolkits.
I like
it seems kind of like a snide, know. Like, hey, Apple, you ever thought about reality?
get it together.
If you Google it, you get tons of virtual reality kit. I think Microsoft has its virtual reality.
That's
again.
Why.
Well, we don't need to be Google. I think that's a low.
That's a low.
Yeah,
low.
Be a low.
They're down by three. There shall be no more banging at 3 o'clock.
Oh, cool.
Well, no, they're done. They go home. Unless that's the foreman down there. He said he stays till four.